Here's the moment she learned she'd won.
Ken Maddock, 67,842. Sue Mount Stevens, 125,704. I hereby give notice that Sue Mount Stevens is duly elected as the Police and Crime Commissioner for the Avon and Somerset area. Thank you very much.
We are fortunate to have an outstanding police service in Avon and Somerset. However, in these tough economic times, we will have to make priorities clearly and work increasingly efficiently. I am committed to improving police performance on antisocial behaviour, burglary and violent offences, especially against women and girls. And just as important, I will listen to all our residents, especially the quiet voices, to understand their needs and help shape police priorities across the whole of Avon and Somerset.
Well, there we are. Sue Mount Stevens joins me in the studio now. Thanks for coming in, Sue. Good morning and congratulations on the job.
Good morning, Steve.
Has it hit you yet, the size of the task?
It's an enormous job, you're absolutely right, and I am getting used to it. But I think it will take some time to get into the job.
Mm. Why did you go for it?
I was always very clear that this was a job that I could do with the experience that I had, but it was really critical that we kept party politics out of policing. And when only party politicians stood for it, that I thought, crikey, I've got to put my head above the parapet here. It's no use just whinging. And I felt very, very, as I say, passionate about it, because the police and the residents were very clear that, you know, party politics had no part to play.
You do return to that refrain many times about the party politic. It's obviously got under your skin in some ways. In what way have party politics interfered, in your view, with the policing to date?
I don't want it to be used as a political football. Policing is a tough enough job as it is. And the last thing I want is, having worked on the police authority, having seen initiatives that they are putting in place, I didn't want some of those kicked out just because it didn't fit in with a certain party's, the way that they wanted to run the system. So what I want to do is have oversight of the police, but to make sure that what works is then rolled out across the whole patch. That's what's really important. Let's just concentrate on the residents of Avon and Somerset. Let's not worry about what might appear right, what might be the good soundbite. You know, I don't even think in soundbites like some of these politicians, as no doubt you will learn over the next 3.5 years. But it is, you know, we've got to use common sense. We've got to look at evidence-based stuff. Mm. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, let's put our hands up and say, no, that didn't work, so we're going to go and do something else.
Mm. But what sort of influence will you be able to have, do you think, as Police and Crime Commissioner? You know, you talk about sort of reducing burglary rates, increasing detection rates. That's what the police do. That's what the Chief Constable is responsible for. Do you think they're not doing it efficiently and effectively at the minute? And how can you change that, Sue?
Well, I can only change it if I have I win the hearts and minds of the police. And but it's all to do with priorities, isn't it? I mean,
but it's more than hearts and minds, it's money, isn't it? You've got, what, £20 million to find as well in deficit. I mean, you know, it's there are police cutbacks, you know, it's facing a very, very poor future at the minute.
The cutbacks are severe, £43 million that we've got to find. So we've got to work smarter, we've got to work differently, and we've got to prioritise. That is the whole point, you know, that's what I said in my manifesto, that these are the priorities, and, you know, and we can work smarter, we can do, you know, we can look at certain areas, target hotspot areas, so that's where we can make a difference. And, you know, that's what I'm going to be working with the police to deliver that.
Give me a couple of examples of that. Give me an idea of where you would go in. I know you haven't started the job. I know Wednesday is when it all starts in earnest. But give me a couple of points that you think could make things happen better and more effectively in the police.
Well, let's look at antisocial behaviour. Mm. It's a subject that is raised at every residence meetings I have ever attended. And I think working with the police and with partners, that's key as well, Steve, that it's... antisocial behaviour is something that is too big for the police. It's got to be a multi-agency approach. And let's look at targeting hotspot areas. Let's look at better identifying
hotspot
them.
Areas. What do you mean? Areas where you know crime takes place, areas of deprivation. What do you mean by a hotspot area?
Where there are complaints, where there are constant complaints,
okay.
Particularly where there are vulnerable victims. This is, you know, we've got that info. The police have that information.
Mm.
So let's work on those areas. And let's look, working with local authorities, working with housing. I remember a copper saying to me that, you know, we can threaten ASBOs as much as we like, but you threaten that there's going to be a breach of a tenancy agreement.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, that might be what stops that certain behaviour. So together, you know, we can make this work, but separately we can't.
Yeah, and you've got to work with the Chief Constable. And this has been quite a bone of contention across the country, hasn't it? You know, you've got the ability to hire and fire the Chief Constable, but you've got to create a working relationship. You know, in Gloucestershire, the Chief Constable decided, no, the PCC was not for him. And that has been... The whole job, in some ways, PCC, has been derided and met with a wave of apathy across the country. How do you... You talked about winning hearts and minds, Sue. How on earth are you going to do that? How are you going to convince people of the importance and relevance of the job you're doing?
I mean, you're right about the relationship with the Chief Constable. That is going to be absolutely key. And working together. And of course, you've got to remember that we are working on the same agenda. We, you know, it's not as if, you know, he wants something and I want something different. We both want to make our residents feel safe and be safe. We're going to have different ways of looking at things. You know, I'm not an officer.
Have you met Colin Port?
Yes, I have.
Have you chatted this through with him?
I met him when I was on the police authority.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and he sent me a lovely note saying, you know, congratulations. And looking forward to working together. So, but obviously, until I start on Wednesday.
Yes. When's your first official meeting with him then?
Later on this week.
This week. Yeah.
So you know, it is key because I have set out a vision of how I want the police and the residents to work together. And, you know, that's what I want the buy-in from because we've got to be more open. Although, you know, in the police authority, I do consider that the police authority, the police have been are open, but that's not the perception, which means that, you know, if the residents don't get that feeling, then we're not selling it right.
The police haven't been open. What do you mean?
I think they feel it's a closed organisation, that they don't, you know, they're concerned about complaints when you complain to the police. Is it the police marking their own homework?
Mm.
So I think we've got to be far more open, far more transparent, and we've got to tell the residents, and that's something that, you know, that communication, I mean, communication is a circle. It's not just, you know, you tell me and I go and do it. If I don't come back and tell you I've done it, you don't know it's been done.
Yeah.
So it's making that communication, that whole circle, all signed up together.
Yeah, and also, I mean, we've talked about the cuts that you've got to make, 20%, but also the wave of bureaucracy that seems to be drowning the police at the moment, and in getting more officers on the beat, which is something else you want to see, more visibility from the police. How can you do that? Do you intend to have you got the I don't know the mandate in this region to do something about the bureaucracy and the form filling and the stuff that takes about 75% of a policeman's time or a policewoman's time?
Bureaucracy has got to be reduced, but you've got to be very careful about this. And you know that for what some people might call bureaucracy, in court it would be called evidence. So you know, it's not saying that we can throw everything out and we're just going to keep it in our heads and never record it. So there is a way of recording it, but it has to be digitalised, and we have to move with the times, and we have to, you know, use technology to be on our side and not work against it.
This is BBC Radio Bristol.
We'll learn a bit later on who's to take over the City Council as Mayor of Bristol and who will oversee the Avon and Somerset Police Force.
If I don't vote, then I can't have a say. Isn't it all going to do something wrong?
Tell me, Stuart, did you vote?
I did. I'm disgusted with those who didn't.
They didn't get that turnout, and as a consequence, there are some very ashen-faced Labour councillors.
I wouldn't want to bet any money on what the result's going to be.
People keep telling us second preferences are unpredictable. We'll wait and see.
Political history being made in the West.
George Ferguson, Bristol First, Marvin Rees,
Labour Party.
Be the first to know.
I therefore give notice that George Ferguson is duly elected as Mayor for the City and County of Bristol.
BBC Radio Bristol.
BBC Radio Bristol, it's Steve Lefebvre with you through until nine. A special programme today, we are talking to Sue Mount-Stevens, the new Police and Crime Commissioner for this area, and also to George Ferguson, who will be joining us just after 7:30, the new Mayor of Bristol. Does it take a bit of sinking in, this new title, basically, Sue?
It's a challenge to getting used to it, I agree. But, you know, I applied for this job. It was a very public job application. And against all the odds, I suspect, that, you know, that the people decided to trust in an independent.
It did seem like against the odds. I mean, did you even expect to get your deposit back? I mean,
No, I didn't. I mean, really? I went in. I think it's. This is the first time I've ever taken part in an electoral process, and I knew very little about it. I was helped a lot by the city council, and I think it was the. I think it was a shock because when you're an independent, you haven't got anyone out there putting any feelers out. Mm. You know, I worked with family and friends to explain to people why I was standing, and I obviously was at the hustings. But you don't have any, because it was such a large constituency as well, it was quite difficult to get any feeling about who was favourite. I went in thinking, crikey, you know, I do hope I get my £5,000 back, because that was based on a 5% turnout that I had to win, and luckily I did, and more.
Yeah, so the £5,000 for that, and then of course the amount of money you had to put up yourself, basically, no machinery behind you had to pay for the election campaign yourself, so the whole thing, what, 20 grand, whatever, maybe more?
No, it wasn't more. It was about I'll tell you the pence in a minute. No, it was about a 15,000 that we've invested in this. And you know, you've got to also remember that we started off with nothing. We had no supporters. We didn't, you know. So 10 weeks ago, when I sat down with our with my campaign manager Claire Ladkin, we thought, how are we going to do this? And so, you know, in 10 weeks, we have done this on a very limited budget. When you look at what the other parties have thrown into this campaign, it's massive amounts of money for me, but it's not in the grand scheme of things. It's not a lot in comparison.
Let me ask you just about experience, because you mentioned that right at the top, and I know you've been a magistrate, haven't you, for about 15 years. You've been on the police authority, vice chair of the Independent Monitoring Board at Bristol Prisons. You've been in and around the scene, but a background, of course, as everybody in this region will know from the bakeries. It's a very different world, Sue, isn't it, that you're going into from the one that you ran? I mean, you've got the business acumen, obviously. You've dealt with a lot of people in your business. But you're going to have to deal with the Police Federation, with chief constables, with a very demanding public. What sort of strength of character is that going to require? And have you ever been tested in that kind of way before?
I believe that I have that experience, and the reason I believe that is because I have listened to residents, and they don't want me to be a police officer. They don't assume that I'm going to be able to work out. I'm no detective. I watch the television programs just like anyone else does, and usually amazed who the culprit is. That's not my role. My role is to bring the voice of the residents right into the heart of policing. So, you know, so to make sure that the policing are aware of that. And also, you know, there are other aspects to this job, you know, as, you know, representing victims, making sure we have a much better holistic way of approaching
victims. Victim support have been on this programme quite a few times, very worried about what's going to happen to their funding. Can you reassure them?
We've got lots of agencies working with victims, and they've all got different approaches. And, you know, having listened to victims, one of the amazing thing is that they can be approached sometimes, like, on average, up to 18 times by different agencies. Now, every time that they have to tell that agency, they end up having to relive their crime. And we are making them, they're keeping a victim by having to relive and retell. We've got to do better than that.
Let me ask you a couple of quick questions. The time flies when we get in these conversations. But Anne in Kingswood, I voted for Sue because I was keen to keep politics out of this position. Your policies worked. But at the end of the day, the amount of money to be spent on policing will be decided by the government. How will Sue deal with that situation? Will you be demanding more money? We get less here, don't we, than other regions in the country for policing.
I certainly will harangue ministers. Let me guarantee this. There will be no minister, no MP that comes in anywhere in our Avon and Somerset patch that does not know that I want more money for our police force.
Yeah, OK. And Jack in South Gloucestershire, two policemen driving around an expensive BMW, costs about £40,000, probably more for a Beamer. And the same price, you could have four estate cars and eight policemen in it. Eight policemen better than two, surely. I think you get the gist.
I get the gist. I understand what they're saying. Yeah. And, you know, I don't start till Wednesday, but there'll be no stone unturned.
All right, there'll be plenty of prioritising going on. Stay with us, will you? Because George is coming in after 7:30. Be interesting to see how you two will work together. Sue, for the moment, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Steve.
We are joined this morning by George Ferguson, and Sue Munn-Stevens has been with us for the last half hour or so. I suppose you could say it's corny, but Friday was dubbed Independence Day in the West after the two biggest upsets in the region's political history. Not only did the independent Sue Munn-Stevens record a landslide victory on a shoestring budget to become the first police and crime commissioner for Avon and Somerset, George Ferguson, though, also romped home to become the first elected mayor of Bristol. Now, he snatched what had seemed to be almost certain victory from the Labour Party and will be sworn into the job in his trademark red trousers this afternoon, which he is proudly sporting this morning as he joins us in the studio. Good morning, George.
Good morning, Steve.
And congratulations again on what was a massive achievement in the end.
Thank you very much. It was. I'm bowled over by Bristol, I think. Bristol has done something really extraordinary.
Yeah, how extraordinary? I mean, the political landscape, when you take in what you and Sue have done, has been knocked on its head, hasn't it?
I think we are in new territory, and we've got to make sure that we make the most of it and we live up to our promise. And I'm sure that we will be able, because we're independents, to connect with the people of Bristol and Avon and Somerset in a better way than we would if we were standing for a political party.
Yeah, I mean, Sue was, if you're listening over the last half hour, but it's a sort of a main thread of what she stood for was the political parties and getting away from that and moving into something quite different. And I suppose from your point of view, that's what you've been talking about for quite some time. Do you feel that the political parties and the infighting and the bickering, and which I suppose is inherent with what goes with that, do you think that's what's been holding Bristol back?
I think it has. I don't want to overplay it because I think there are, you know, and I've said it time and time again, I think there's some real talent and good people on the council. And so I'm not having a go at the individuals on the council, but I do think that
the system more than the individuals.
Well, I think the system, which basically was invented for Westminster, has seeped down into our local government in a way that has not therefore resulted in people necessarily being chosen for their merits, but more for the political party they happen to be standing for. And, I mean, there are instances across Bristol where a councillor may have lost a seat and been shoved into a new one and then reappeared in another seat and in another ward. And you sort of feel that's fiddling the system in a way. I think people should stand on their own account. And that's what's happened here. And I think people have really got it.
What, but to both of you, I mean, Sue as well, you were talking earlier and you were suggesting, you know, I'm still surprised when people say they voted for me, you know, because it is against a massive system that's been in place for such a long time. Why do you think there's such disillusionment at the minute? Why do you think now people have suddenly said enough is enough, we want a complete change?
I can only talk on behalf of the Police and Crime Commissioner. And you know, it was very clear that we're just fed up with party politicians, and particularly for the police, there was not a part to play. You know, it's the bickering that goes on, and the trying to fit things into their party policies was not acceptable to residents, and I think they felt that they didn't want the party machine to take over another slice of society, which is what I think would have happened if a party politician had won this role.
Yeah, yeah. And you two, you're going to have to work together, aren't you? I mean, you're chummy at the minute, and let's hope that continues for some time. But, you know, will you actually be working together? Because you've got Bristol at heart, haven't you, George? You've got the whole of Avon and Somerset, I suppose. So is there a slight difference in what your particular aims will be in funding and so on?
Well, Sue and I didn't know each other until Sue declared that she would stand and we met each other. And I absolutely instantly realised that Sue was the right person to do this job. She's got an understanding of policing. She is truly independent. And I think we will see eye to eye. We may have the odd tiff about the resources that Bristol gets. I don't know. I hope not. Because I know Sue realises that the urban crime, an awful lot of the street crime and those sort of things are probably more concentrated on Bristol than they are any other part of Avon and Somerset. Mm. And we will together make sure that we have safer streets and a safer community in Bristol. So I've absolutely no doubt that we will, that we will work very closely together. And I really look forward to that. And I know Sue's such a genuine, decent person I will have absolutely no suspicion about her intent.
I love this on day one. Let's record and come back in a year's time. I hope that continues to be the case.
I think the real key is that neither George nor myself we're going to play games. Mm. Okay, it's very clear what we want to deliver, and we will make sure that with the resources available, we do the very best job. But it's too important to play games. Mm. We're not going to score points off each other. We know what we want to deliver. We want to deliver safer streets. We wanted to, as I've said before, I want residents to be safe and feel safe. And it's key that we work together in the same way as I will work with all other leaders in Avon and Somerset. We've also got to accept that we've got less money, so we've got to be smarter.
Yeah,
yeah. But I think Sue hits a key there. It's feeling safe. It's a psychological thing. Mm. But you have to tackle the real problems to get people to feel safe.
Yeah,
an awful lot is about fear. And what we need to do between us, I think, is reduce the fear of crime. And I know that we're both keen on crime reduction. I mean, I think rather than just look at how you tackle crime, it's much, much more is how we reduce crime, especially amongst the young. And I'm proud of the young of Bristol. I think they're fantastic, but there are a few that let them down, and we need to make quite sure that we all work together.
Yeah,
do that.
Just on that, Elspeth on Facebook says, Sue, will there be? I know we touched on this earlier, but will there be an increased number of bobbies on the beat or PCSOs? I can't remember the Cleve, not Bristol, but I can't remember the last time I actually saw a uniformed officer in Cleveland. I think a lot of people sort of coming in on this visibility of the police, and that just engenders safety, doesn't it? They feel safer.
No, that's a subject that's been raised at at many of the meetings that I've gone to, because we want to feel confident, don't we? That's the whole issue. That if we can see more officers, PCSOs, specials, that we will feel confident, and that's something that we're going to work on. But I'm not going to suddenly say I'm going to put hundreds of bobbies on the beat. I can't do that. There is no money. So what we've got to do is make sure that the officers and the staff that we've got are more visible so that they spend less time in police stations and they're out on the streets.
Let me throw one quick one at you just before you do head off. Of course, there's a vote on Thursday for the prisoners' vote. Strasbourg trying to pull this in, saying prisoners should be allowed the vote. I don't know whether that would have increased the turnout really for PCCs. Should prisoners be allowed to vote?
You're asking me a politician's question. I'm not going to answer it.
Oh, come on. You must have an opinion on that.
I may have an opinion, but that's not my role. What you've got to understand is that a police and crime commissioner has got to be apolitical. Yep. And it's for Parliament to decide. That's what you voted MPs in to do. You didn't vote a police and crime commissioner to make that sort of comment, and not going to.
She's starting as she means to go on. Sue My Stevens, I appreciate you coming in. Thank you very, very much indeed, and good luck with the new role.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
We will talk again.
Thanks
for coming in. It's 7:45 on BBC Radio Bristol.
Breakfast with Steve Lefebvre.
BBC Radio Bristol.
What else have you seen in there, George?
End of the right to challenge planning rulings in the Daily Telegraph. I've not had time to read it yet, but I mean that's a big thing. Mm. I think there has been extreme use of judicial reviews, and some of those which we've known in Bristol, and it has caused amazing delays. So I think it's getting the balance of the democratic right of people to be able to challenge the system, and yet to enable things to go ahead,
to get done.
So I'd be interested to read that, but yes. The headline grabs my attention.
We'll give you time. Yeah. How to avoid the tax avoiders, Jim?
In the middle, there's a whole page in there which they've put together, and it's how to avoid doing business or buying products from companies who avoid paying UK corporation tax. So there's a list of companies that have been named and shamed. Mm. Starbucks, eBay, Vodafone, Facebook, Amazon. And it just says that there's alternatives. If these companies won't pay UK tax, then don't use them.
Some of the big department stores, aren't they sort of saying that they're at risk of going under because of the competition from these other...
And it highlighted that you know, one of the great British store, John Lewis, are up front, pay all their tax. Mm. You know, and they're upfront about it, exactly how much the profits and how much...
George.
Well, I think, some of these global companies do behave disgracefully, and I hope that Bristol will see them off in trying to take advantage of us, and that it all the more emphasises to me the way we need local, good, ethical companies at the absolute source of our economy, rather than relying on these globals who come in and shove our local companies aside in many cases, and shove local jobs aside, because you take some of them, they may claim to create a job, they're probably destroying a couple of jobs in the independent sector.
They're massive companies to shove to one side, mind you, aren't they? This string of global names.
But I think we need to challenge them. Yeah. I need, and the same applies right across the books. I think that we need the people who can afford it to be paying for Bristol. And at the moment, I think that is not quite the way we have it.
All right.
This is BBC Radio Bristol.
Monday the 19th of November, the headlines this morning.
Bristol's new mayor and the new police and crime commissioner have said they will work together to tackle crime. An appeal for help for the family of a 3-year-old boy in intensive care after their home was destroyed by fire. And the UN Secretary General calls for an end to the conflict in Gaza.
And in the sport at 8:30, England's cricketers lose the first test in India. And Derek McInnes says Bristol City have signed a class act in defence.
BBC Radio Bristol News at 8 o'clock with Naomi Lloyd.
Bristol's first directly elected mayor will take his vow of office later. George Ferguson has said he will work with the Avon and Somerset's new police and crime commissioner to tackle crime.
An awful lot of the street crime and those sort of things are probably more concentrated on Bristol than they are any other part of Avon and Somerset. Mm. And we will together make sure that we have safer streets and a safer community in Bristol.
The UN Secretary General says he's deeply saddened by the deaths of 11 members of a family in Gaza following a day of Israeli airstrikes. Ban Ki-moon says the conflict, which escalated last week, must stop. 80 Palestinians have now lost their lives, and 3 Israelis have been killed by rockets fired by militants. Osama Damo from the charity Save the Children says the situation is becoming unbearable.
The situation here is reaching an unprecedented level of fear among the children. In addition to the humanitarian situation, we are talking about children who are trapped inside their homes along with families since 5 days without food, without drinking water, and the medical supplies are running out of stock.
Thank you very much indeed. It is 7 minutes past 8 o'clock on BBC Radio Bristol. History is being made in Bristol today. The city's first ever elected mayor, George Ferguson, will be sworn in this afternoon. The ceremony will take place in the passenger shed at Temple Meads. Here's the moment that he learned his long campaign had won the day.
George Ferguson, Bristol first, 37,353. Marvin Jonathan Rees, Labour Party, 31,259. I therefore give notice that George Ferguson is duly elected as Mayor for the City and County of Bristol.
I want everybody to know where Bristol is, for all the right reasons. So please, I ask you all, let's pull together. And I will be making one oath. It's an oath that the young men of Athens made when they became citizens. And this is an old man of Bristol that will make when he becomes mayor. I shall not leave this city any less, but rather greater than I found it. And I ask all of you to take that oath with me. Thank you.
Well, there we are. I don't know about the old man of Bristol, but he's looking particularly energetic this morning and fresh and ready for the job. Good morning, John. You still get a tingle when you hear that footage from the other day.
I do, really. It was an extraordinary moment because although I had felt something really moving over the last couple of days and on the election day itself, I just thought, I think we've done it. It was extraordinary to have it confirmed like that because it was a mad, crazy thing to take on the big party machines. And I think Bristol seemed to respect that.
What did turn it? Right up, probably until the last day, it did seem a bit of a shoe-in. And at best, I suppose people were talking about tactical voting and you might pick up the second votes and do it that way. But it was a very convincing win in the end, George. I mean, surely you couldn't even have expected that.
No, the size of the win was... I mean, I thought I might do it, but the size of the win was staggering, really. And what really pleases me is when you analyse the figures, I've taken votes pretty evenly from the three main parties. So while the Labour vote was by far the biggest vote, actually, if you look at it and compare with previous elections... there was a reasonably even take, and so there was no total collapse of any party. And so that pleases me because I think the perception might be otherwise, and the Greens and I together, because the Greens definitely improved their standing in the city during the election. I think our votes went up by. I mean, the total take of the number of votes was a rise of about 44% for independents or small parties, while it went down by about 15% from each of the other parties.
Yeah, and a collapse, of course, for the ruling Liberal Democrats.
Well, you say a collapse. It was about the same. It was about 15% down for all the main parties.
Coming in fourth, though. I mean, and...
in fourth was... Yes, yeah. But, I mean, of course, that it would have been third if I hadn't been there, I suppose.
But you were there. You got a lot of votes. People wanted change. They've also put a lot of faith in you, haven't they? Despite the fact, I know you're going to be the first to admit it, you're going to wait until you get in there before you can discover what sort of changes you can bring about. A lot of the stuff, and we've discussed it before, George, is highly aspirational. But have you taken them not so much on a wing and a prayer, but have you taken them on a wave of enthusiasm for change as opposed to hard-bitten policy?
Well, I deliberately didn't make stupid, rash promises because that's what party manifestos do, and we've seen what happens with pledges. It's not a sensible thing to do. But I think the biggest change has got to be a change in mood, and I felt it. And, you know, going around the weekend has just been an extraordinary amount of enthusiasm. And I think between us, all of us, the whole of Bristol, we've got to grasp that enthusiasm. And so I think it's what people have described as that soft power of making sure that we celebrate Bristol, that we stop being cynical about its leadership, and that we're all in it together to make a better place. And I've always said that the emphasis must be a long-term one. So let's not just look at what I'm going to do today and tomorrow. Let's look at what Bristol is going to be like for our kids. You've got you've got kids. I don't think they're that young anymore, are they, Steve? No, your kids. They vote. Beginning to flee the nest.
Yeah.
But I think it's really it's their future that I care about. And if we make a city that's good for our kids now, it's good for all of us. And if we make a city that is a healthy and greener one, it's going to be much better for them in the future.
Well, come on to some of the big points, cabinet cuts in a second. But first of all, just again on the aspiration for Bristol as a city, it does punch well below its weight, doesn't it? I mean, how big profile-wise should Bristol be in the terms of England?
Well, I mean, I'm never going to claim it's the second biggest city in terms of population.
I heard that mentioned.
The second biggest city. But I do think it is the best city outside London in England. And, you know, I passionately believe it. And that's why we're here. That's why people who come to the BBC to Bristol don't leave it. That's they stay here out of choice. And that applies to so many people. It's got the biggest retention rate amongst students who come to Bristol University. Mm. I'm one of them. And
yet it falls down on many matters.
So I think it's just getting that across to people.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I'll be unashamedly, I shall be a salesman for Bristol. I've got to beat the drum for Bristol. I've got to bat for Bristol as well as well as England did yesterday.
trying to think whether that's a good analogy or not. Let's come on to, though, your first day in the job, and boy, you're going to hit the ground running. You'll have to, because you thought it was 25 million. We're now hearing from the council it could indeed be 32 million with the early intervention grant going by about £4 million. £32 million of cuts, George. Where on earth do you start?
Well, 32 million is today's figures. I get between 25 and 30 million have been batted around. It's going to hurt. And what I'm absolutely determined to do is to make quite sure that it doesn't hurt as much at the places where it really matters, in terms of those who suffer, those who are unable to look after themselves.
Well, this latest cut isn't it? That's children's services.
I mean, absolutely. There are loads of potential cuts that are deeply damaging to the support services that Bristol has to provide. And I think I've got to try and be clever with it. And I think it's what we've got to try and do. And I really want to dig down, and I want to have an independent look at the budget rather than just taking it from the current regime as to what the cut should be. I think I want to set up a little team to have a proper independent look to dig down. But
what about the early thoughts? Raising the council tax 1.99%?
I've said that I think it would almost be irresponsible to freeze the council tax at zero. I mean, there is a balancing act there, is that if you freeze it, you get a grant from the government for freezing it. But actually, if you raise it by the limit of 2%, and you can't raise it by more than 2% without going to a referendum to the people. And the general record is that people don't vote for having higher taxes. So I think the sensible thing is to raise it by the level of inflation, which is in effect a freeze, which can't be more than 2%, and I think that's right. But council tax is not a very fair tax. I would like to look at other ways of raising funds from those who can afford it, and that's probably got to be by consent. But I would like to look at that. I think there are many of us who can afford to pay more, who should pay more, for the sake of Bristol, that's probably been very good to us.
Yeah, okay. Other thoughts, like the use of the property portfolio, being more entrepreneurial. You've got various ideas for raising the money and making the city more
effective. Absolutely, but that's probably more applicable to capital projects, the arena and things like that, where that may need to be subbed to a certain extent by the capital portfolio. And so I'm going to be looking at setting up delivery teams for specific projects like that, and obviously looking at the capital and the property portfolio would be part of that.
Yeah, let me just ask you quickly before we pause, because we've had a few calls on this as well, and this is something that you have mentioned, and that is the changing of the name before you've actually got into office of the Council House to City Hall. A few people coming in saying, City Hall, how much is that going to cost to change the masses of printed and online maps, council web pages and stationary maps mounted around the city, etc., says Joan, and something similar from Chris as well, new headed notepaper. Who's going to pay for the cost of this?
I've already said that not one page of headed paper will be wasted, not one map will be wasted. This will only be this will be brought in slowly. There's the only expense will be today is a temporary sign saying welcome to City Hall.
And yes,
I just think it's not just about it.
So who's going to pay for
it? It's not about a name change.
Who's going to pay for it then, if there's not one penny going to be...
I've said not one page of paper will be wasted. Yep. The only... it's just putting up a few different signs. But, no, it's a name in people's minds. Where there are not
so it will still officially
there are not a lot of signs up saying Council House. Or, yeah. I mean, when you reprint paper, it costs virtually nothing to change the design, you know. So I don't. That's not an issue. What's an issue is how welcoming our governance is to the people of Bristol. Mm. And I want this to be the most welcoming city, both to the people of Bristol and to the people who come into it. And I mean the most welcoming city that you can imagine anywhere. And I think this is part of it, saying this belongs to the people of Bristol. Right. It doesn't belong to the council.
We'll come on to who's going to be backing you up, i.e. your cabinet, in just a second or two. George Ferguson, the mayor-elect, is with us. Can't quite call you Mr. Mayor yet, can we? That all happens this afternoon when you're officially in office. Lots of questions coming in. They're actually flooding into us, really, on the text and the calls. From as we've mentioned, how much it's going to cost to change the City Hall. These are the sort of things you're going to have to deal with, George. These are sort of questions you are going to have to answer to others. For example, on Breakfast over a year ago, says Tim in Redcliffe, it was reported the old post office building at Temple Meads would be refurbished to make way for a new media centre. 14 months on, the work hasn't started. I'd like to ask George Ferguson what he knows about the project and what the future holds for this long-standing eyesore. Many thanks. Quite a few long-standing eyesores. You know, this goes back to you said earlier on about moving things on. What's going on with the post office? It's an awful thing to
say. I was talking about that on the PM programme on Saturday on Radio 4. I've talked about being a welcoming city. I think we've got to be a city where there's a wonderful first impression when you arrive in it. It's a terrible impression, that. And he says 18 months. I think this has been hanging about for about 7 years. I'm going to put pressure on the owners and everybody else involved to make quite sure that we deal with that. It's now in the enterprise zone, and it's vitally important that we have really good sense of arrival. I mean, it's not just that building. It's when you arrive at the station, I want people to get in a cab and feel they've arrived in one of the best cities in Europe. I want enthusiastic cabbies. I've got great time for the cabbies. I think that they are they're ambassadors to Bristol, as we should all be. I want to make quite sure that they feel part of the place. I want to make quite sure that when you come out of the station that you've got a real sense of direction about where you're going, and that you're coming into a glorious city. You don't get that feeling at all at the moment.
Yeah.
And that applies to coming in from whatever direction you come into Bristol. So let's look at doing. And well, I will put pressure on people
a bit
to
like
make sure
that
we
Val
get rid
asks
of those guys
as well. I'd like to ask George how he plans to get some of our empty office blocks filled. Then we can be proud of some of our great modern architecture and say that Bristol is truly occupied and open for business. The big projects as well, George. You know, it's not just having welcoming cabbies, isn't it? It's getting the place up and running.
Yeah, but the little things actually make a huge difference. But yes, empty office blocks, let's be imaginative about how we use them. I think that so far that they sit there waiting for somebody to take them, and at the moment you can pick up office blocks pretty cheaply. Let's be imaginative about how we use them, maybe for some form of accommodation, for residential accommodation, and for lots of other uses. There are some good examples where empty office blocks have become communities, for artists, for creative industries, for other things. Let's be flexible about it.
Let me get on to the cabinet. And Danny actually has got a question here. I'm worried that the political parties and the council will throw their toys out of the pram and not work with George. How does he think he can win them over? You've got to pull together. I think you've chosen six, haven't you?
That there will be six.
On your cabinet. They have to be drawn from councillors with various degrees of success in this, because Labour aren't going to go for it, are they? They have to put it to the NEC.
Don't believe that. I want to respect, and this may be surprising to people, I want to respect the outcome of the election, the mayoral election, and look at having a cabinet that is reasonably in proportion to the outcome of that election in terms of Labour, Tory, Lib Dem, Green. And so my offer will be a good one to Labour, I think. I think we'll find
that
we've got
that?
Much more in common than they actually believe. I mean, tough things are said at elections, both, and there, you know, I understand there are wounds that are being licked at the moment, but I think that I can attract them onto a cabinet, and if I don't, I shall leave some empty seats there for them. So, and I think I leave the people of Bristol to judge.
But it's not just whether it's licking wounds. They need permission of the NEC to join any cabinet, don't they? So,
yes, but I mean, this is what I've been complaining about during the election, is central control of parties. I think Bristol has voted for something different, and I think there are some really good people in the Labour group who would be excellent cabinet members, and so, I'm asking for them to put Bristol first.
So wait a minute,
not play these party games. Yeah. And I think there are some sensible people there who will rise above that party nonsense.
Have you got six people in mind, George, at this moment?
I've got more than six people in mind for six positions.
But have you got six first choices?
I want to talk with the parties. I don't want to say I'm going to have A, B, and C. Mm. I want to say, let's talk together about who are going to be the best people. I have some people in mind. You have some people in mind. Let's see who are going to best serve Bristol at this point. Yeah. It will be an interim cabinet because we got elections next May. There may be changes. Might lose some of the members of cabinet during that election. You never know. So I think it's an opportunity to have an interim cabinet.
They've a lot to think about, haven't they? They've a lot to think about. You know, whether or not they want to be associated with a new cabinet that is immediately going to be responsible for 32 million, or as you say, somewhere around that figure of cuts.
But it's a matter of whether people want to take responsibility or not. Yeah. I think it would be utterly irresponsible after what's happened for people to turn down the opportunity to deal with that.
And when you say
it is a tough nut to crack, but I want to share that with others. Yeah.
When you say, I mean, the importance of Labour being involved and you'd leave empty seats, what do you mean? You'd have four in the cabinet and two in case they want to come in later? How would that work?
Well, if you look at the proportion, it could be three. I shall leave seats available for them to join, and you know, I'll make a point of the fact that they're empty seats. I think it's utterly irresponsible after this election if any of the parties are not willing to take what I believe will be a very reasonable offer.
Have the party leaders
and I will, you know, and I'm going to respect some of the policies that people came up with during the election, I think, are worth consideration. I don't think I was the only person that was right.
No.
People bought into my vision, but I think there are some excellent policies come from other cabinet
candidates.
Even some of the French candidates came up with some very good things, you know, and I think that it's, you know, I feel a responsibility to take account of those.
Yeah, absolutely, but it's whether or not they buy into that as well. Have the party leaders been in touch with you since you won the election?
I've talked to...
You had the congratulations of the various
leaders? I've talked to some. I mean, it's a sort of delicate situation because I don't want to over-air make edicts. And I think that... there are conversations to be had. Mm. And I've put out signals and I expect... I expect that people will rise above the politics. And
you expect or you hope that they'll rise above
the
politics?
I expect them to rise above the politics, because I actually believe they will look extraordinarily foolish if they don't.
All right. A special programme this morning. We're talking at length to George Ferguson, who is the new mayor of Bristol, joins us in the studio. George, thanks. I know you have to race off. You've got a bit of a commitment at nine and beyond, haven't you, for the rest of the day?
I've got a job to start.
Got a job to get on with, yes. Instead of all this sitting around talking. That doesn't do any good at all, yeah. Does it? Can I just ask you, and short answers for a couple of questions here. How does George justify his blanket ban on supermarkets when the community in Fylwood is just on the brink of getting a much-needed supermarket for the redevelopment of Fylwood Broadway supermarkets? You don't want any more. You don't want any more.
Whoever talked about a blanket ban? All I want is to have much greater fairness about the decision about supermarkets. I think they managed to force their way into communities against the wish of the communities often. I think that we need much stronger planning laws to be able to deal with that.
Will George be leaving the Merchant Venturers as promised? And can we rename the Colston Hall rather than the council building? Says Sean.
Well, I said that we'll have a talk about the renaming of the Colston Hall. I think, you know, if that's what people want, I'm not going to be the renamer of everything, but I think that's a people's decision, and definitely it's worth a conversation. And I've already said that I will leave the Merchant Venturers, although I need to have a conversation with the master, because I want to do it decently.
Yep.
I think they've done they do a fantastic job for Bristol.
But the answer is
I think
yes.
People underestimate that.
All right. To the new mayor of Bristol, Bristol City FC have the go-ahead for their new stadium. What are you going to do to see that it is built? Thanks, says KC and a few others on Ashton Vale and that whole deal as well.
Well, at the moment, that's a legal matter in which I cannot interfere, and I'm not going to spend council money on interfering with a legal process.
Yeah, okay, but you're keen to get, as you have stated,
I would absolutely respect the decision, and if Ashton Vale is not declared a town green, then they have a planning permission to go ahead.
All right.
And I will do everything I can either way to help the club realise its ambition to have a new stadium.
Transport, bus, rapid transit, stay or go, what happens?
Well, I think it is a bit half-baked at the moment. There is no operator. There is no vehicle. I think I want to have an urgent review of bus rapid transport, and I want a conversation with government about that. I've already been talking to Greg Clark, the city's minister, who rang me to congratulate on Friday. We're going to have a conversation this week, and he will be putting me in touch with the right people. But I don't believe this business about if we change the system, we lose the money. I think there's an open door there to have a really constructive conversation.
Yeah, because
I've been very clear about my position on that. I have a mandate to have a very serious discussion with government about it, but that also has got to involve a discussion with the surrounding authorities.
Yeah,
I want to build good relations with the surrounding authorities. Hear me, Cuba, the county that used to be Avon. I want us all to work clearly together for the interests of Greater Bristol.
Yeah, but you want an integrated transport authority, don't you? North Somerset, South Gloucestershire, dead set against it. So how are you going to reconcile that?
Well, I don't know about the dead set. No, let's not make any assumptions. You make assumptions about Labour being dead set against being on my cabinet. I have different signals.
No, I didn't say that. I said it had to go to the NEC, actually.
Right, yeah.
We can bring you some more information on that in just a second.
Assumptions. I'm a bridge builder, and I will do everything I can to build bridges.
Let's have a quick listen then. The Conservative leader of North Somerset Council, on whether he'd ever want to join an integrated transport authority. Here's what he had to say, Nigel Ashton.
If it benefited North Somerset, we would agree to it. But in all the years I've heard it spoken about, nobody has ever shown me the advantages of an ITA, integrated transport authority. It costs more and gives us no powers that we don't already have as sovereign councils.
So there we are.
Well, obviously a conversation to be had with Mr. Ashton.
You have a lot of conversations to be had. Yeah. Going to be an interesting one, just very briefly, with the city's minister, though, as you say, with Greg Clark, and the kinds of powers that you will want to bring to Bristol. I mean,
absolutely.
The relationship with him is going to be absolutely vital to this whole
absolutely.
Process.
Absolutely. And I'll be talking with Simon and others about this.
Simon Cook. Simon, good morning. We'll bring you in a second or two. The outgoing leader of the council, Liberal Democrat. Good morning. And just to say, no doubt, your congratulations to George as well. It's quite a change, isn't it, for Bristol?
Oh, it's a huge change. No, and many congratulations to George, and good luck, mate.
but, you say that with feeling.
Yeah, you say it with feeling.
Yeah, I feel this weight sort of dropping off my shoulders. Great. Wow.
I just wanted, before I shoot off, to thank Simon for having actually looked after the council in an excellent way in the how long? 6 months you've been in post, and not made any decisions that have made my life more difficult. Mm. I mean, I think we have a very difficult situation to deal with. I will learn the depth of it this morning, or a bit more of the depth of it this morning. Yeah. But I think certainly the current administration have been respectful of the fact that we're going to have a change of governance in Bristol, and have probably laid the ground reasonably well for it.
And everybody, Bristol, is at the centre.
And now we're all in it together.
Yeah. No, it's down to you, mate. You're the mayor. One man. Listen, you've got to get off, George. I appreciate you coming in. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks,
and we'll hear from you later, because, of course, our team will be down there with you and seeing how those things unfold throughout the rest of the day. Simon, I mean, you say sort of, I don't know how flippant otherwise it was. It's a big thing to run a city, isn't it? And sort of in passing it over basically from the political parties to one man or one individual, what sort of a job has he got in his hands?
Oh, huge, because I think there's an enormous amount of expectation out in the city about what he's going to be able to achieve. And I think there's going to have to be a certain amount of reality check about that, because at the moment he won't have any more power than I had as leader. So and of course there are shrinking resources. But in the context of that, I mean, he has got this citywide mandate, which nobody's ever had in the city before. And he's got the ability to knock on doors at Westminster, which I think, you know, the leader didn't have before. So there will certainly be things, I think, that government will be keen to talk to him about. Mm. And, you know, there may be things that they can help him with.
Yeah.
We certainly, and I think right across the council, we'll want to give him all the support we can. Having said that, we're party politicians, and you know, we all come from different places, and we will be very, very frank and clear about what we think he wants to do.
And in putting together his cabinet, you know, of the various different parties, is that going to work? Is that or will self-interest come into this whole thing with elections coming up next May?
Well, of course there'll be self-interest in it, and there might be, I hope there isn't, but there might be some party game playing. Mm. But look, you know, he's got to have a cabinet he can work with, a capable cabinet, and a cabinet that is supportive and has the interests of the city at heart, not the interests of party politics.
Yeah.
And I hope that that's the way it manifests itself. But, you know, it's up to George to put that together, and we'll see how it.
Yeah, and as you feel this weight lifting off your shoulders, as you describe it, almost see it physically happening. What are the main priorities, do you think, he's going to have to grapple with and change? What is it that does hold Bristol back, do you think?
Well, the biggest job is the budget. You know, there's another 28 million to trim off the budget. We've done 55 million in the last 2 years. These are big, big sums. Mm. And, you know, the first 2 years, we were trimming the fat. We were having a go at the low-hanging fruit. But now you're into the meat, and it's very, very hard. Mm. And we have made sure that George has got more time to bring the budget together between now and the end of December. But that's going to be a very, very tough one. And, of course, that just influences everything else, because that's about the money.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are things. I mean, he wants to review the bus rapid transit scheme. I think he's got a right to go up and do that. I don't know how successful he'll be.
Mm.
There are things like making sure the continuing programme of providing school places, which we've done, I think, very well up till now, and every child has had a place, physically a place to go to, even if not their first preference. So that's a big job. You know, the changes we made in adult care, I mean, these are all very, very big areas.
Yeah.
It's a tough job.
And as the dust begins to settle, are you guys, do you think, I mean, you're feeling around the council in general, are beginning to be warmed to the idea of a mayor? Or is there still a vast amount of cynicism?
Well, we wait. No, I mean, I think we're going to make it work.
Mm.
I mean, the people of Bristol voted for it.
Yeah.
So there's no point in just sort of constantly trying to snarl the thing up. No, we're going to make it work and take the city forward.
What do you think of the mandate, the sort of overwhelming nature of his win? I don't think anybody really saw that coming.
No, we didn't. I mean, certainly the Labour Party didn't, I think. That, I think, gives him enormous strength, and I wish more people had voted, having said that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But look, you know, he's got this a very, very substantial, robust mandate, and I'm sure he'll use it responsibly. But, you know, it is a baptism of fire. George hasn't been on the council for 30 years, so, you know, he will have a very sharp learning curve. And but I think we'll all want to get together and help him in our own way.
Yeah, OK. Interesting stuff. And what about you now?
I don't know.
What's next?
I don't know. Well, I, you know, I have my own private business and stuff, yeah. And you know, I still act, and so I'd hope to carry on doing that. But what part I'll have in the future, it maybe in the administration, I don't know.
Wait and see what happens. Yeah. Simon, great to see you. Thanks very much indeed.
Cheers.
Talk soon. It's nearly 10 minutes to 9 o'clock on BBC Radio Bristol.